The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
In 2016, Irish author Joseph O'Connor wrote a play, Vampire Man. The play centred around the real-life relationship between Bram Stoker and the two greatest stars of Victorian theatre, Henry Irving and Ellen Terry. In his latest novel, Shadow Play, Joe gives these three characters a new stage, I suppose, and he's with me in studio now to talk about it. And you're suffering from the dreaded lurgy,
a little
Joe.
Bit, Pat, a little bit. It's good for me having to talk.
And get the tubes going of a morning.
Yeah.
Your interest in Bram Stoker, where did it come from?
Bram Stoker feels as though he's been with me my whole life. My late grandmother, who was from Ferrybank in Waterford, but I always think of her as a dub. She had a great store and stock of Dublin ghost stories. She used to love telling us the story about Marsh's Library up near the Liberties, which is haunted by the ghost of its founder, a man burdened with the name of Archbishop Narcissus Marsh. And there was a young woman in his life, a ward, who he looked after, I think a niece, and she ran off to get married. And she couldn't bear to just disappear. The story was that she wrote him a letter and she hid it inside the pages of one of the thousands of books in Marsh's library. So every night the ghost of Archbishop Marsh would come and
look
to all the books, tear them all apart.
Hoping to find the note.
Looking for the letter. Anyway, she had loads of those stories. But the best story that she used to tell concerned a relative of her own, a man who had been around in Victorian Dublin, and he was a lamplighter. And she used to tell us that one night while he was on his rounds, he was on Church Street, which people will know is just off the north quays of the Liffey, where St. Mikan's or St. Mikan's Church is, with the mummies.
And the crusader
crypt.
Who lost his head recently and happily had it retrieved.
Yes, God bless him. Anyway, so the lamplighter is there one night in the 1880s, and he sees this prosperous, athletic-looking man looking a bit out of place because Church Street is a poor neighbourhood at that time, and he goes over and he starts talking to him, and the man says after a few minutes that his name is Abraham Stoker and he works as a civil servant in Dublin Castle and he writes ghost stories at night. So she used to embellish the story and like by the time I first heard the story when I was 6 or 7, by the time I was 15 or 16, like Bram Stoker had been invited around for tea, you know, and was a close friend of the family. But still, there was enough of a kind of seed of truth in it that I just thought, wouldn't that be a lovely thing if someone belonging to me had met Bram?
I was talking to one of his relatives not so long ago, and indeed talking to researchers about Bram Stoker, and saying that, you know, he was a sickly lad and he lived on the Clontarf seafront, and he used to look out on people, the poor and the sick, and he himself being sick. And it was this kind of imagery that led him to be creative.
Well, we don't know, but it's certainly true that he was very sick as a child. We're not sure exactly what it was still, but the symptom of it, the main symptom, was that he Bram couldn't walk until he was 8 or 9. So he never attended school. He didn't have close friends. He was at home a lot. His mother was from Sligo, and she had herself written a very vivid memoir about the effects of cholera on the local peasantry. Some parts of the book are quite gruesome. So she may have been an influence on him. We don't know. Anyway, I sort of grew up knowing him as sort of one of the ghosts of Dublin, one of the people who had lived in Dublin. It wasn't until I went to London, actually, after I left college, I went to London. One of the first jobs I had there was working as part of the team on the Rough Guide series, you know, those travel books. I helped to write The Rough Guide to Ireland. So I did the kind of the books and culture bit of that book, and I started to research Bram. And his life was so fascinating. I had never known before that he left Ireland as a young man. He went off to England. He worked in the theatre for his whole life.
He was really going to be a civil servant if he hadn't.
He was, yes. He worked here in Dublin Castle, and then off he went to London, worked in the Lyceum Theatre for 3 years.
Now, he was married.
He was, yep.
And this makes life a bit complicated in your tale.
Yeah. Well, marriage always makes life complicated, but makes it simple and complicated at the same time.
Now the other two characters in this, besides the missus, we have Ellen Terry and we've Henry Irvine. Now, explain in today's terms how big stars they would be.
My sort of conception of Henry Irving, who was regarded at the time as the greatest Shakespearean actor of his era, and some theatre people still really revere him. There are contemporary accounts of him appearing to kind of mesmerise the audience and hypnotise them, and people would say that he could change his face on the stage. And we kind of see that sometimes with a really great actor. They are able to create that kind of illusion. But he was kind of Mick Jagger meets Lady Gaga, you know, an incredibly charismatic, sexually magnetic presence. People absolutely loved him. Ellen Terry, I suppose, is really the first theatrical superstar. People would queue around the block to see Ellen Terry in anything. She always used to say about herself, like her shtick was, oh, I just put on the frock, I just put on the costume and I go on stage and I'm just myself. I don't know why they're so interested in me. But she was a very brilliant, highly successful artist, the highest paid actor in England at the time. So these two people became Bram's close friends. So there's a period of 6 or 7 years when the three of them are working together and kind of living together in the Lyceum Theatre.
What was Bram's job in the Lyceum?
He was the manager. He was everything was his job, to sell the tickets and fix the roof and pay the actors and all of that. But he loved it. He loved the kind of nightlife. He loved all the stars coming to the theatre. Irving and Ellen Terry really made the theatre very spectacular. You know, if there was a volcano mentioned in a play, they wanted to put the volcano on stage. If there were sword fights, which there often were, obviously with the Shakespeare canon, they found a way of electrifying the swords so that when they touched each other, sparks would fly. They loved all of that. And then Bram, I think he just loved London so much. It's very touching. He used to love walking home late at night after the play was done and after, you know, the first night party on the stage. Bram loved walking home through the empty streets of London.
Now, is there evidence of a kind of a love triangle, whether real or sublimated?
I think there is. I mean, my book, which is called Shadow Play, it is a work of fiction. And the first thing that I say in the afterword is that.
Yes.
And then I direct people straight away who are in search of reliable information to the textbooks. I think it's very ardent, very passionate love. Irving and Bram, I have no doubt, loved each other immensely. They signed letters to each other, eternal love. They referred to each other in interviews as being closer than spouses. Then Ellen Terry is the only real life person mentioned by Bram Stoker in Dracula, where she's used as a sort of metaphor of beauty. A character in the book says, jokingly, flirtatiously, to his girlfriend, if Ellen Terry won't have me, perhaps you will. So it's an interesting thing, I think, that a novelist would choose to put somebody who he actually knew into the book.
Is there anything of Irving in Dracula?
Well, people said at the time that there was. I mean, it's no coincidence that Bram's most famous character, Dracula, is also very magnetic, in some ways very attractive, in some ways more fun, actually, in the book than the kind of very nice people who are trying to hunt him down. But Bram never said that there was. He wrote a very long two-volume biography of Irving, and he never mentions Dracula once. So it's an intriguing notion, but we don't actually have very hard textual evidence for it.
How did his marriage go, given this new dynamic in his life and the Lyceum?
I think they had a very interesting marriage. Bram was married to a fascinating woman from Dublin, Florence Balcom, who's often described as the most beautiful woman in Dublin. She had been engaged at one point in her youth to Oscar Wilde, no less. And their parting gift, rather deliciously for Dracula fans, when the romance broke up, Wilde gave her the gift of a crucifix. So she was a remarkable woman. There were imperfections in the marriage, and they just kept it going. And I think there was a very deep fondness. And after Bram's death, Bram died having written 7 or 8 novels, none of which were successful. 10 years after his death, Dracula was pirated by a German film company who made the great film Nosferatu.
Yes.
And Florence spent the rest of her life suing them, dragging them in and out of the courts. She established some of the rules of copyright that are still in existence today. So she was a remarkable, tough woman.
And I'm sure she did well ultimately, because after the Nosferatu movie, I presume Dracula became culturally iconic.
Well, it did, the book must have sold very quickly. Yeah, I mean, what caused it to become iconic, as you say, really was the movies. He is the most filmed character in the history of the movie. So it's a lovely notion that it was all written by this quiet clerk from the north side of Dublin.
Shadow Play, nominated for the Eason Novel of the Year in the Irish Book Awards.
Yep.
Yet so, another accolade, perhaps in waiting. Who knows?
Well, who knows? It's lovely to be shortlisted, and it'll be a nice night, one way or the other.
Well, a great read, and it's called Shadow Play. It's written by Joseph O'Connor. It's available in all good bookshops now. It's published by Harville Secker of London. And Joe O'Connor, I hope you got through it.
I got through it. I'm feeling better, actually.
Thank you very much for joining us.